The dungeon where Baha'u'llah and 40 of his followers were imprisoned used to be a reservoir for a public bath. Later it was turned into a prison. It was underground, and its ceiling was very low. It had neither a window nor even a small opening through which air or light could enter. It was a gloomy and filthy place. Around his neck, the prison guards placed one of the most dreaded chains in the whole land. It was called Kahra Guhar, weighing more than 50 kilograms, and was so heavy that Baha'u'llah could not sit up straight, and his body was continually bent. He bore the weight of this chain for 4 months, and the scar of the resulting wound remained on his neck for the rest of his life. For 3 days and nights no one brought even bread or water for Baha'u'llah. One of the officials, who felt very upset about this, had asked Baha'u'llah if he could secretly bring a cup of tea for him. Baha'u'llah did not accept his offer. At last, Asiya Khanum and Mirza Musa succeeded in bringing food for him from home. But Baha'u'llah did not wish to eat. How could he eat when the rest of his friends and the other prisoners were hungry? Nabil writes that one day Baha'u'llah, recalling his imprisonment, said that although the chain around his neck was very painful, even worse was that they tied the fingers of his hands behind his back. Shoghi Effendi has given great importance to the period of Baha'u'llah's imprisonment in the dungeon, because it was in the middle of that confinement that God's purpose for him was revealed. The believers were placed in two rows, each facing the other. Baha'u'llah had taught them to repeat certain verses, which they chanted loudly every night. The dungeon was near the palace of Nasiruddin Shah. Once he heard their chanting and asked where it came from. They told him that the Babis were praying in the dungeon. On the following day, Nasiruddin Shah ordered that some roasted meat be taken for the prisoners. Everyone was waiting for Baha'u'llah to let them eat. But the Blessed Beauty said it would be better not to touch the meat, so they obeyed his command. Every day, the executioners would come to the prison cell and call out the names of those who were to be executed on that day. When the chains were lifted from their necks, they would happily come to Baha'u'llah, and he would assure them of God's grace and mercy. Then they would say goodbye to the other believers and go out to their martyrdom. When the executioners would come back, they would tell Baha'u'llah and the others how bravely the prisoners had faced their death. The important thing was that all this suffering, the foul-smelling air, the gloomy place, the heavy chains, and even the bad food, never turned the believers away from their faith. These 4 months of imprisonment in the Siya Cha dungeon was the third period of Baha'u'llah's life. Abdu'l-Wahhab was one of the believers in the dungeon and was chained with Baha'u'llah. One night, he had a strange dream. He was very excited about it, and when he awoke at dawn, he said that he had seen himself in a very bright place where he was able to fly in all directions, feeling very happy and comfortable. Baha'u'llah said that the meaning of his dream was that he would be martyred on that day and that he should be patient and grateful. Abdu'l-Wahhab was very pleased to hear these words, and he bade farewell to all his friends in the dungeon. Then he put his arms around Baha'u'llah gave him a warm embrace, and said farewell. In a very similar way, every day, one or two of the believers were called out to be martyred. The love and faith of Abdul Wahhab and other believers was such that even the executioners, whose job it was to kill them, were astonished at their fortitude and courage. Unlike their other victims, who trembled like leaves in the wind in front of them. They had recognized the cause of God with their pure hearts. They wished that their blood should water the young tree of the faith of God. The executioners could not understand the manner in which the believers would go to their martyrdom. They would even put sweets in the mouths of those who were about to kill them. People who had pure hearts and no prejudice were moved by this act and would accept the faith. The ignorant ones whose spiritual eyes were veiled by a dark curtain of prejudice and who did not understand such behavior would even help the executioners. It was in the darkness of the dungeon that the first rays of divine inspiration rose from Baha'u'llah's heart. The weight of the chains upon him and the foul conditions of the dungeon allowed him but little sleep. He himself described it beautifully. During the days I lay in the prison of Tehran, though the galling weight of the chains and the stench-filled air allowed me but little sleep, still in those infrequent moments of slumber, I felt as if something flowed from the crown of my head over my breast, even as a mighty torrent that precipitateth itself upon the earth from the summit of a lofty mountain. Every limb of my body would as a result be set afire. At such moments my tongue recited what no man could bear to hear. Those moments were momentous, because in them, Baha'u'llah was given a very special and exceptional duty for saving the human race. The time was not yet ripe to declare this openly. Therefore, this is called the secret revelation of Baha'u'llah, and it took place in 1853. Days passed slowly, until it became clear to the government that Baha'u'llah had taken no part in the attack on the life of Nasiruddin Shah, and he was finally released. The Grand Vizier sent his representative, Haji Ali, to the dungeon and saw Baha'u'llah in such a terrible condition, tears filled his eyes. He saw the Blessed Beauty with shackles on his feet, his neck injured by the heavy chain, and breathing heavily in the foul air of that terrible place. He screamed, "God, I had never imagined that you could have been subjected to so humiliating a captivity. I should never have thought that the Grand Vizier could have dared to commit so low an act." The first words the Grand Vizier was moved to address to his captive were the following: "Had you chosen to take my advice, and had you disassociated yourself from the faith of the Bab, you would never have suffered the pains and indignities that have been heaped upon you." "Had you, in your turn," Baha'u'llah replied, "followed my counsels, the affairs of the government would not have reached so critical a stage." At this moment, the Vizier remembered that at the time of the Bab's martyrdom, Baha'u'llah had told him that if he did not prevent this cruelty, the flame would be even stronger and the situation would become even worse. The Vizier was now ashamed and said, "The warning you uttered has, alas, come to pass. What is it that you advise me to do?" "Command the government of the realm," was the reply, to cease shedding the blood of the innocent, to cease dishonoring their women and injuring their children. The Grand Vizier obeyed and immediately sent a circular address to all the governors of the realm to stop the persecution. Only God knows how happy Baha'u'llah's family was on seeing him back with them. The children, with tears in their eyes, thanked God that they could see their beloved father again after 4 months. Although the new house of Baha'u'llah was only a two-room apartment and not the mansion they used to live in before, none of the members of the family were concerned about it. They circled around Baha'u'llah like moths round a candle, and each one wanted to show his extreme love for his beloved father. They must have forgotten all the sorrow of the 4 months. How much Baha'u'llah appreciated the sacrifices of the Babis in the dungeon, those who had bravely given up their lives in the path of God and put on the honorable crown of martyrdom, knew that the greatest gift of the world and the most precious treasure in the true faith of God was in recognizing the manifestation of God. They were therefore proud to say that they believed in this great cause, although this declaration meant death to them.